Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. A better business starts with planning for profit. Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, at entrearchitect.com/free course. You're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 154. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Being a married couple in architecture, well, my partner, Anne Marie McCarthy, is my wife and my partner at my architecture firm, Five Cat Studio. And being a married couple and partners in architecture may be the most difficult. Well, it may also be the most satisfying, and it's probably the most successful approach for us at being a small firm architect. It's not always easy, and it's not always pretty, but I would not trade my life as an architect, married to my partner, Anne Marie, for anything. Our relationship and how we've established the roles and the responsibilities in both our firm and for our family is how we've become successful. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, I've invited another married couple to join me here at the show, Claire and Kevin Costello from The Ranch Mine, and they're here to share their personal story and how to succeed as a married couple in architecture. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by TrueStyle, the leader in high-end architectural interior doors. Have you checked them out yet? Learn more at TrueStyle.com. And FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, track your time, and get paid faster. Learn more at FreshBooks.com/architect. Claire and Kevin Costello, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Hi, Mark. Good to be here.
That's great having you here. Claire and Kevin are partners in an architecture called The Ranch Mine in Phoenix, Arizona. They are the creators of custom modern homes. Very interesting story. I've been following them for a long time, even before I met Kevin. On social media, you guys do a great job on social media. Kevin has been here before on Entree Architect Podcast. He was on episode 138. It's called How to Design and Sell Modern Architecture. And And we spoke about how the firm was started and how they built the firm through their development projects, designing and building their own projects and then selling them. We talked about how they built their brand using publication and social media. And they have a really powerful story they've developed. And that's a great story that they tell. And so I encourage you to go back to listen to episode 138 at entrearchitect.com/episode138. And I've invited Kevin back with Claire, because we talked about Claire last time, but she wasn't here. And so we wanted to get you back together and talk about a subject that is something that people ask me all the time, because I'm married to my partner. Anne Marie McCarthy is my partner in architecture, and she's my wife, and she's the mom of my kids. And we have it, you know, it works. And I wanted to invite you both back and talk about that. Talk about how do you guys make it work? Because I think it's not uncommon to find married partners in architecture. I think it's a little bit more common to find failed marriages in architecture, that they become architects and then things, you know, don't work out because of, you know, the architecture firm, and because it is difficult. It's a difficult profession. And when you have conflict in your business, in your business life, it sort of finds itself into your personal life. And there's certain ways and certain ways of living and relating with one another on how to make it work. So I want to talk about that. So sure. I'm really excited about that. But before we do that, I want to put Claire on the spot, because Kevin's already answered this, gone into his origin story back in episode 138. I want to have Claire answer tell us her story. But I want Kevin to just give us a refresher for people who haven't listened to 138. Who you are, where you came from, how you became an architect, and you know how you found your way to where you are today, and then Claire can give us her story.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. I'm originally from Connecticut. Grew up on the shoreline in Connecticut and went to school to get my architecture degree at Northeastern University. And I got my undergraduate and graduate degree there and worked. Northeastern is a co-op school, so I worked for about what totaled to be 24 months to almost 2.5 years of full-time work at architecture firms in Boston and Connecticut when I was going to school there. And then after I graduated in 2009, I decided that I wanted to have a sort of a large change in my life. And I decided to get up, pack my car, and move all the way across the country to Phoenix, Arizona. I didn't know anyone here at the time. I had a friend who was moving out here as well, and he introduced me to Claire literally the first day that I arrived in Phoenix. So that's how I got to Phoenix, and that's how I met Claire.
You know, I can tell you, you know, it's January and I'm in New York, not far from Boston. And you're in Phoenix, so I could understand why you left.
Exactly. Yep.
It's cold and gray and drizzly and oh.
We were back for the holiday, so we got a taste of that.
Little dose of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you found warmer weather, and found Claire right away. So that's pretty awesome. So Claire, tell me your story. Go back as far as you want to go. And tell us your story and how you sort of found your way into architecture and how you found your way to Kevin.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. And during that time, I know, it might sound really simple, but my parents would always get like the Crate and Barrel catalogs and furniture catalogs, and I would study them. I would stare at pages for hours thinking of like, oh my gosh, the placement of everything, just, it was all very fascinating to me. And then outside of that, I had a couple influences from my early life. So my grandfather, my dad's dad, built his own house in his farm out in Indiana. So we would go to grandpa's farm, and it was just a very small two-level house on the slope of a hill with a wraparound deck, and just the pride that he had in that space and the stories he would tell about, you know, building the stairs, and he thought he didn't need an interior stair. They would just go outside to the basement and all these little quirky things. Really painted a dialogue about design and how to create your home life. And then also my uncle down in Tucson was a similar story. He built a rammed earth house down in Tucson, and he still to this day he has another property that, you know, he's going to build a new home and have goats and solar. And I actually went down to Tucson when they were in the process of building the rammed earth house, so I got to see, you know, how to accommodate all of your electric and place outlets and have all of the board formed, you know, layers of sediment being tamped down into place, and have these huge thick walls, and learned about thermal mass just on a very simple, not any kind of book studying structure, but really just kind of a personal level, and having somebody who is really inspired to do that and create that for themselves. So those were a couple people that really played a big difference in kind of my orientation and kind of interest in how people create their home lives for themselves. And I went to school outside of Arizona. I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder. My undergraduate degrees are in English and communication, so totally unrelated to design. I did want to go and get my MBA after my undergraduate degree, thought better of it at the time because I didn't want to take on more debt graduating in the 2009 era.
Yeah, tough time to graduate.
Yeah, I thought it was better to start making a little money. So that was kind of, you know, my education really didn't mimic design in any capacity. It was really more based in my personal life and my personal relationships. So then when I was moving back to Arizona in 2009, we had a mutual friend in common, and I met Kevin, and I had actually heard about Kevin before. They had traveled a little bit together, and we met, and he was obviously very rooted in architecture and wanted to pursue architecture. And I just really loved the conversation that he had about the built environment and the what design could do, even at a single family home level. So that really just spoke to me. And we were at the point that, you know, we weren't really getting the jobs that we wanted, either of us. So we decided to take a really big leap and buy a foreclosure and redo it with very limited kind of funds. And that was probably the biggest challenge. Having survived that, I think really enabled our day-to-day now be a piece of cake, because when you're renovating something and you're making an investment, just the two of you, you kind of, you know, have all of those really big conversations of like, even the little thing, like, you know, what tile or what kitchen layout can feel like the biggest deal. So I think that really put us through a big test early on that makes it easy to have some perspective when things seem to carry more weight on a day-to-day.
Would you recommend young architects who are considering what you did diving into a project like that right off the bat?
You know,
looking back at it.
It's hard to say. I actually really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I've always kind of been a hands-on learner. So I think that was invaluable, something to do to make me realize, okay, the sequence of building your designs, how does that work? What trades do you need to get involved? What decisions do you need to know earlier rather than later? So I really see a lot of value in it. It's really up to an individual basis, though. It does put you through the ringer a little bit. So don't do it without caution.
Yeah, it's very taxing on on yourself to do something like that, because not only are you financially invested in it heavily, pretty much all of our money, and but it's also emotionally, you're emotionally invested because you're doing it with your partner, and so when you start to mix heavy financial strain with emotional strain, and you know the time it takes, and you know we were physically doing some of the labor and that kind of stuff, it definitely is, like Claire mentioned, it kind of makes what we do now seem very cozy and nice, because we kind of just jumped into the most difficult thing of, like, we just went in and basically ripped a house apart and started from that point. So it was jumping to the deep end for sure, but it definitely, I think, helped us accelerate the growth of what we do a lot faster.
Yeah. And if for anybody who's listened to episode 138, that was the beginning of everything.
Yes.
You know, that's how you got to where you are today, was that first project and what you did with that project after it was finished. And so, you know, the other thing that while you were talking about it, you know, I was thinking it's the first thing that you did out of school. It's the first thing that you did, as a couple. And at that time in your life, you have many fewer responsibilities. You can take much bigger risks, and you can completely fail, and it'll be easier to recover from that at that age, although it
yes.
would be devastating. It would be easier than to wait, because I think most of us wait. Say, okay, well,
right.
I'll wait until I have more money, until I have more security, until I have more stability with my family. At that point, it's too late, because you have a family and you have these responsibilities, and you have, you know, a larger firm with employees, and you're responsible for more. And so to take that risk later is much more difficult than taking that risk earlier.
Yes.
And you experienced that you saw that it was difficult, but it built everything else that you have, not only your business, but your relationship, that it solidified who you were as a couple, mm-hmm. and got you to where you are today, and allowed you to put in some, you know, systems both in your business and your personal life to make it work.
Yes.
Definitely a lot easier to do when you're younger. I mean, we were 23 years old when we did that. And like you said, you know, draining your bank account at 23 years old is not the end of the world, because you have time to recover from that. We didn't have to, you know.
We weren't thinking about kids.
We weren't thinking about
funds.
Kids
right.
or college funds
yeah.
or any of that kind of stuff. I didn't have health insurance, but, you know, you're a healthier person at that time. And you can make some more sacrifices. Not that I would recommend that, but, you know, you can cut certain things. You can eat a lot less expensively, and, you know, because you're in that college mode of living on not much money.
And to your point, Mark, talking about the systems then you put in place, it was definitely eye-opening to see, okay, you have the architectural components of the home, of moving walls or doing an addition, those sorts of things. But then you also have an interior portion where your cabinet selection, your tile selection, all of those finish items don't necessarily have to be totally fleshed out at the design part. So now we have a system where we do select all of those finishes when we're still in the design phase and are working with our clients to figure out what their aesthetic is and what would be appropriate for the type of home they have. But they get two sets of documents, right? They get the traditional architectural construction document set, and they also get a document that's their interior specification book. So that interior specification book is easily manipulated or changed. Say if an item goes out of stock, we can plug in a new item without, you know, worrying about having it be called out specifically in the construction document set. It's much more manageable for our clients to have all of those decisions and have a clear marker of, okay, this is what all of the city and all the general contractor, all of the nitty gritty architectural work is. These are some of the refined, you know, smaller decisions that create the color palette and things like that, that you want to go for. So it definitely gave us a good timeline of decisions and priorities.
Yeah, that and that's how a business works, right? That's how it becomes successful, and it takes a long time to figure that out because we're not trained as architects in that world. And by, you know, by doing a project and to have a partner like you, Claire, that sort of, you know, came outside of architecture, coming with different responsibilities and a different set of experiences, some of those systems can be put in place much earlier and much sooner. And then as you grow your firm, you develop those systems. And so that's something that I've recently been talking about a lot. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you. Thank you to two of our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, True Style Doors and FreshBooks. As platform sponsors, these companies have provided funding and support for our overall mission to become an influential force in the profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms like you and me to build better businesses in order to be better architects. Have you ever gone back to a completed project for a visit and found the doors sticking or the seams splitting and a very unhappy client about those doors? We're in the client happiness business here as small firm architects. And when a piece of our project fails to perform, especially one that our clients are touching and seeing and using every day, it makes us as architects, it makes us look bad. And True Style will make us look good. True Style is passionate about providing us small firm architects with the inspiration and the tools to transform our designs with the most authentic and distinctive doors available. And with more than 400 made-to-order styles, True Style offers beautifully stable, premium MDF doors for painted applications and 20 standard species of wood across all architectural categories, from traditional to contemporary and everything in between. They do everything. Every True Style door is made to order. True Style, driven by design. Visit TrueStyle.com and start designing your doors today. That's True Style, TrueStyle.com. And in case you're wondering, 192 hours works out to about 2 business days a month. Why am I doing math here at Entree Architect? Well, if you're an architect and you're using FreshBooks, it's a cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could be saving in this coming year, 2017. How? FreshBooks is so fast and so easy to use that it changes the way that you deal with your paperwork. FreshBooks has been completely redesigned from the ground up and custom built for the way we work as architects. With the new projects feature, you can share files and messages with your clients and your contractors and your employees. So you'll see how quickly things happen when all your conversations are in one place. And the new notification center is like your own personal assistant. You'll always know what's changed in your business since the last time you logged in to FreshBooks. And you'll also know what needs to be dealt with right now, like overdue invoices. You'll know right there on the notifications page what's overdue and how it's overdue. And you can set up automatic reminders to your clients. That's my favorite feature. You can get paid by credit card and you can send automatic reminders. So you send the invoice and then you can forget it and FreshBooks will do the rest. So when you're ready to give FreshBooks a try, go to FreshBooks.com/architect, that's important, /architect, and sign up for your free 30-day unrestricted trial. You get the whole thing for 30 days for nothing. And you'll get the simplest way to be more productive, more organized, and most importantly, you'll get paid faster. And that is so important as architects. FreshBooks.com/architect, and be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section so they know that we sent you. Let's talk about the structure of your firm. How is your firm structured? Do you have employees? Are you working with any other people, independent contractors? Sort of describe the firm and how it's structured so we know some context.
So the ranch mine is Kevin and myself, and Kevin is the architect, the registered architect, and I am the chief executive. So I work all within the office realm And then we go back and forth. Kevin definitely is the lead on design, but we still have collaborative moments. So we always, the two of us will visit projects to do the initial visits with the homeowners. We do the existing conditions together so we can both wrap our head around what is there to base our design off of. And then we come back again at design development with the materials, with interior. I kind of take the lead on materials, our product library, that sort of thing. And also landscape elements, I'll take a little more of a lead on. But Kevin, for sure, is full architecture all the way through. And then we also do have independent contractors that help us along the way on certain projects.
Mm-hmm. Are those roles are they formal? Like, this is my domain and this is your domain, and you know, the lead is clear on who's doing what?
I think so.
I mean, it's not written out on who makes what decision, but anything that's related to architecture, I'll, you know, if we're having an argument and it's 50-50, you know, it leans towards myself. And if it's a business-based decision and it's 50-50, it leans towards what Claire has. We agree on most stuff. But when it gets down to that very difficult line of making a hard choice, that's when the role of, you know, if it's a business-based decision, Claire will have the final say. And if it's an architecture decision, I'll have the final say.
That isn't to say that we never have different opinions, though. Yeah. So,
how do you resolve that?
Yeah, so I think oftentimes when we're dealing with client work, it comes down to, okay, what is it that we're showing our clients? What design are we going to be sending them to review? I think Kevin has pretty much the final say on that. But I do get vindicated every once in a while where, you know, he'll have a built-in bookcase or entertainment system. And, you know, I'll say they're going to want to put furniture there. But we let the client kind of give us a little bit more feedback on some of those interior kind of personal preferences. So we do keep a little bit more flexibility probably than
it's easier with clients because ultimately they're going to make a lot of decisions you know, in terms of the design and what goes forward and stuff. And sometimes you know, if Claire has a different opinion on a design than
I'll
myself, she'll sketch it out and then I'll cat it up and, you know, tweak it a little bit, make the dimensions work, and then we'll present both and we'll see which way the clients lean towards. And I think it's helpful to have both an architect and a non-architect's perspective, a male's perspective and a female's perspective. People from two different areas. I think it's good to have that diversity within our team itself, and I think it pushes us to create better designs rather than just funneling through one mind. So I think that works out pretty well in terms of challenging each other to be better at certain things.
I do think there's a interesting. We both have our own perspectives, right? So I'm not from the architecture realm. When I sit down and visit a house, when I sit down with our clients and hear what they have to say, that's the perspective I try to represent of what our clients really want at the end of the day. Why are they engaging in a redesign of their house or a new build of a custom home? Why are they doing that? How do they want to live? Do they cook a lot? Do they want to entertain a lot? Do they want to be outside a lot? I try to filter everything through the perspective of the day-to-day homeowner and how they're going to function within the space. While Kevin, and speak up if you have a little bit different idea, but I think his perspective is really rooted in the architecture and the site and what would be appropriate to the site. What would be appropriate to create a really dynamic space. He understands that scale much easier than I do. And my kind of level of intuition in trying to portray a project is really based on the homeowners that we work with or the developers that we work with.
Yeah, I would describe it as I start sort of like top down, big picture in, and Claire starts sort of the smallest detail out. And then we sort of meet at a certain point somewhere within the home of, you know, I'm starting from a very general concept, even a lot of times on an urban scale, moving down towards the home, and Claire's starting from the perspective of the homeowner,
right,
inside their home, starting to go out, and then we sort of meet that way.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. So Claire's sort of dealing with the emotions of the project,
yes,
and you know, Kevin's dealing with the structure and the big picture. It's interesting. Anne-Marie and I, Anne-Marie McCarthy's my partner and my wife. I think I mentioned that in the beginning. I say that all the time because I always forget who I said it to. I think collaboration and roles and responsibilities are the key to success as a married couple in architecture, is that you need to know, whether it's formal or just clearly understood, whose role is what, you know, it and whose domain is what, you know, and that's how we've succeeded. Is that we've made it very clear that Anne-Marie is the design lead. She does everything from the architecture to the interiors, all of the design. I'm an architect. I love design. I love architecture. But I love business. You know, it's my passion. It's what I love to do. I love the administrative part of it. I love the people part, you know, the client part. And so we've set up our systems that Anne-Marie does all the design and I do all of the client contact and the contractors and the project management and dealing with the staff.
Yeah.
And it works, you know, that when there's a design issue, it's not my issue. It's Anne-Marie's issue. She deals with it. I may have an opinion and we do collaborate. You know, I work on every project from a design point of view, but it's always just, you know, a review. I mean, for us, it's interesting because I'm working with the clients, but she's designing. So I become that intermediary between the client and Anne-Marie. Anne-Marie meets the client, but she doesn't work with them on a daily basis. And so we collaborate that way with information. But the actual design process is all completely handled by Anne-Marie. And I think really what's important is that we have that established roles.
Yeah.
When we first met, we tried to design a house together and we almost killed each other. You know, very, very quickly, very, very early in our relationship, we learned that there needed to be a role separation, that we needed to understand that in order for us to work as a couple, never mind as a married partner.
Right.
It just to, you know, as two people who are interested in the same thing, who's going to be in charge when it needs to be, you know, somebody needs to be in charge. And if you don't have that, it doesn't work. You'll have constant conflict.
You'll run around in circles.
Yeah. And I think it helps you get specifically better at tasks if you can separate them. Mm-hmm. And because Claire is so focused and has been for the last 7 years on understanding clients and their emotions and the sort of very tactile, small scale stuff, she's gotten incredibly good at that, and I haven't had to really get too in tune with that, where I've been able to refine the more exterior, larger scale stuff and really focus on that. So splitting it up, I think there's also a benefit in terms of getting significantly better at it than if you're both kind of generalists.
Right.
I don't think you can get as in tune with certain elements. And then you just have to have that communication between you two to be able to fit those two separate skills together.
Yeah, and I think the results speak for themselves. I mean, when you look at where you are and what you're doing and how quickly you got to where you are, that is a testament to you, to your couple, you know, to the two of you, the responsibilities that you've each taken, the understanding of those roles and responsibilities and who's going to do what. I think that's so important to see that. So here's a big question. Do you think if you didn't meet one another, do you think you would have succeeded as quickly?
Definitely not.
I doubt it.
Yeah. No, I think.
So, Kevin, if you tried to do this alone, where do you think you would have been today?
I most likely would be working for another firm, I think. I don't know personally, if I would have been able to make the business end of it work so well, I mean, I might have been able to do it myself. I don't want to put that out of the picture, but I don't think the success in how fast we've grown would have been able to happen, you know, because there are a lot of people that work out there by themselves. I just think it's the speed and the efficiency and the growth of the company is directly related to the relationship that we have. So I think there's no way that we would be where we are right now individually.
Yeah. And I think from my perspective, you know, I did become a licensed real estate agent. And so I think I might have been confined a little bit more to a realm that was focused on maybe flipping kind of styles and not really being able to engage with a bigger and more refined dialogue of that architecture lends itself to be. So I think it definitely was a help to find each other and have kind of those alternating strengths.
Do you think the fact that you're married, because this is what we're talking about, is about partners, you know, whether you're married or not, the success that you're having and you're seeing and experiencing is much coming from the fact that you have more than one person doing it, that you have two people doing it and you have multiple defined roles and they're being handled by two different people. Same with me and Anne-Marie, that, you know, there's no way we would have been where we are today if it wasn't for the relationship and the roles that we have. But how do you think, you know, as a married couple, how does this, the overlap between your personal life and your business life, how do you guys do that? Is your life just one completely merged, integrated life? Or do you try to create some sort of separation between business and your personal life?
It definitely took a little while. At the beginning, it felt like business really took over, and it was hard to make those boundaries of like, okay, the end of the workday should be here. I shouldn't, you know, be rushing back to my computer after dinner and working another three additional hours or something like that. So it definitely took over in the beginning. I think it was just a lot of work there, maybe for a good year, I'd say.
2 years. And that was part of this being a startup too, was we were working more hours to make ends meet. But that also then has a negative effect on the relationship because it's all work, you know, and no relationship time. So after about a year or two, we started to get a lot more firm with the boundaries of when we're working and when we're not working. We used to do meetings at nights and on weekends. We no longer do that. So we've tried to set, you know, specific deadlines for when we're working, when we're not, because it can easily flow into it. And it's not to say that we don't talk about work outside of it, because it is a passion as well. But we've tried to make it very clear about working hours and non-working hours. We also work in separate rooms in the house. So during the day, we're not, you know, right next to each other within earshot, but, you know, we have our own space and can do our own work. And so finding balances of when you're together, when you're not together, when you're working, when you're not working is definitely the challenge that we've had to work on.
I think it helps a lot to find some mutual enjoyment. Like, we go on hikes a lot. We like to get outdoors. We like to be able to go on a bike ride down the canal. You know, even there's a bridle path in Central Phoenix that we'll go and take walks on. Just little things like that, that you can just get up and go and be outside of work. And I think that really helps me to kind of see, you know, the mountain preserves in here around Phoenix and really just kind of be like, okay, the fresh air, you know, it kind of resets me.
No
I think
computers,
that
no phones.
I think that helps a lot, because then you can kind of take some time away, even if there was a work challenge that was on your mind. You can kind of clear your head and finding little interests like that to kind of take yourself out of work all the time. Even we try to take little trips still. Our relationship started with a bunch of little day trips and exploring what Arizona had to offer. So finding times to find exterior inspiration. We like to go to Dwell on Design and Palm Springs and little things that are full of, even in town, Paolo Soleri creates bells here, and little things that are a little more artistic. They don't necessarily have to be architectural based, but it's still things that we're interested in. And, you know, just trying to make times for friends, replacing those client meetings that we were having in the evening with dinner with friends instead really helps that out. So we've been more conscious and more effective of like, okay, we want to try to do movie nights on Friday nights, you know, really set the tone of it's the weekend to now check out from work.
Yeah. I think limits and boundaries and formalizing them, is very important, you know, whether you're a married couple or not, but especially if you're a married couple, and even more so when you have kids, you know, that, because those boundaries become very, very important when you have kids, that you don't miss out on the opportunities to experience your kids and having a part of that as your life. And one of the benefits of being a small firm architect, especially somebody like you and us, that you have that flexibility. You can create your own hours, and you can actually, you know, create a system and create a life that you can do the things you want to do when you want to do them. You know, that when I have a trip that I have to go on with my son, I just schedule it into my life and I go on that trip. I don't have to ask anybody, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, you do what you want to do when you want to do it. And like you said, you don't work weekends anymore and you don't work evenings anymore. Same with us, you know. It's we don't ever work weekends, and it's very occasional that we'll work evenings. We just tell our clients that we're closed on the weekends.
Yeah.
Period.
You know?
If they're a client that can't do a project with us that they can't meet during the week, then it's a project that we can't do. It's
just
one of those boundaries that we've set.
Yep. Yeah.
And it may be a really great project, but you have to set those boundaries and be pretty strict on them in order to have a life that works outside of architecture.
Yeah, we are still young. We will see about family when it comes up, but I'm sure there are many more complications once that gets involved. So kind of knock on wood that we'll adjust into that next stage. Maybe we'll come back again once that happens and give you an update.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that you definitely are off to a good start. You know, the systems that you've put in place and the roles and responsibilities that you've set for your own personal life and your married life will definitely lead itself to a successful family life. I can see, you know, that you're already on the right track for that. So I'd love to have you back then too. Both Claire and Kevin, I thank you very much for sharing your knowledge and your story and your personal story here as well. I appreciate you being so transparent and open about your life and your business. Your website is theranchmine.com for anybody who wants to go check it out. It's a great site, actually, if anybody wants to go see how an architecture site should work. It works really well. You're on social media. As The Ranch Mine official on Instagram, and I think you're The Ranch Mine everywhere else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Claire, I have one question for you. Kevin already answered this question back in episode 138, but before we wrap up, I'd like to ask you the question that I ask all my guests. What is the one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
So I think the one thing that smaller architecture firm can do today to better tomorrow is really be grounded in what the right projects for you would be and what those criteria would be, and be empowered to turn projects down that maybe aren't the right fit. So really identify your ideal projects, what those are, how many ever check marks you need to check off to figure out if it's a good project for you, figure out what those terms are. And then also the next step, though, is to find a network of, say, a landscape architect, an interior designer, other people. So when you do have to say no to a project, you can still be a resource. You can still maybe have a network of people that you feel confident in referring that might have a similar design aesthetic to you. Maybe it's too complicated of a landscape project, or only interior. Maybe an architect just isn't necessarily needed and your plate is full. Really be confident in the network that you can create and still be a resource to people as they do reach out.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Great advice. Target market is something I talk about all the time. Kevin talked all about how you guys built your firm and how you're building and selling modern architecture back in episode 138. And that's how you did it. You know, you focused on one thing and got really good at it and became an expert in that. And, you know, people know who you are and what you do now. And you're designing great architecture now and selling it. And, you know, it all works out when you focus on one thing and become the best at that. So that's a great advice. Both of you, Claire and Kevin, thank you very much for sharing some time with us here at Entree Architect and for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having us, Mark. Yeah. It was fun.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
And we'll have you back soon. We'll talk some more about those systems.
Sounds good.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode154. Hey, and don't forget to visit the website over at entrearchitect.com to gain access to our digital course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, and learn how to build a powerful profit plan that will work for your small firm. Visit entrearchitect.com/freecourse and download this free course today. entrearchitect.com/freecourse for the Profit for Small Firm Architects course. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Think about that. Build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through
relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.